So, Jake, I
Yes.
have been referred to on this podcast as the Forever DM. That's kind of the title we've chosen.
Well, last time it was the Big Bad Wolf,
Last
but
time it was the
okay.
Bigger Wolf. Typically, it's the Forever DM. But I knew that there were other DMs out there where that forever part of the title meant a much longer time than I have DM'd, right? I'm about at 10 years, but I knew that there was DMs where that forever piece of the title is much, much longer. So I went
Yeah,
searching.
you're still basically a baby drooling and spittling all over
That
yourself.
is kind of my DM style. But I went searching for, the more the wisest, most legendary DMs out there, and I couldn't find the little guy from the cartoon. So I found the second best, who just happened to be my dad, Joe. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you, like I said, have been DMing much longer than I have. The forever DM in your title, the forever means a lot longer. When did you start, do you think?
Well, I do remember the little guy with the sideburns on cartoons when I was a kid. I remember playing that guy, wanting to be that guy. Yeah, I've been doing it for a long time. Probably, I think I started originally when I was 8 years old. So that
Oh
was
my gosh.
1980, 81, something like that.
Yeah, you've been doing it for a very long time, and so we thought that there's no better first guest of the podcast to have on because you've played with Jake and I. You introduced me to D&D in the first place and got me to run for my friends. And so we thought you'd have some great insights, and we could ask you some questions and kind of pick your brain a little bit.
Well, as somebody once said, wars don't make one great. I guess I don't know if I do a very good job sometimes. I've done it a long time, though.
That's fair. I mean,
Every time that we've been at your table, Joe, I've had a tremendous amount of fun.
well, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that, dude.
So I
I've
definitely.
had so much fun with you guys playing too, because it's so refreshing to see young people take up this hobby. And I say young. I know you guys are young, and it's so wonderful to see how that, kind of not only looking at it through your eyes and kind of remembering how I used to play D&D or any of the RPGs, but also kind of how you guys have taken it and done your own thing with it, which is super cool.
I think we still have a kind of a wonder about it, a twinkle in our eye, which has been fun. And we started young and still are young doing it. So I think that's kind of something we talked about in the last episode, was it's so interesting to see how people's groups evolve. And I kind of mentioned your group, how you started as kids playing together, and some of those people are still in your group, and their now kids are also playing in your group. It's like a generational thing that's happened.
Yeah, one of the first guys I ever played with is a guy named Mike. And Mike's son now, who's 20 years old, is playing in the group. So not only do I have old man Mike,
Jeez.
but I've got young man, young
Young
kid
Mike.
Nate. Yeah, young Mike there. He's been playing, and his other son has also played. Brian's played for a while too. Yeah, it's very surreal.
You have
I
like
mean, as
legacy
I said,
players.
exactly. You're my dad's DM. Kind of like you know, school. So strange.
Awesome. Well, I definitely wanted to kind of give, not that I don't have questions, but I definitely wanted to give Jake an opportunity just because he might not be as familiar with kind of your history with it to kind of ask some questions. I know he was pretty excited, so he told me he had quite the list. So, Jake, go ahead
Oh,
and
good.
intro us a little bit.
Okay, so you've been playing since you were eight, and that's quite a bit younger than I thought because I thought we started young at like 11 in middle school.
Yeah. I
So
do
I,
remember you guys doing that, playing it here sometimes. I
yeah,
think
it
that's
was
right.
almost always at your house at the beginning, at
Yeah.
least when we were doing the dungeon crawls.
Those little DCC magazines.
Yeah. So you've been playing a long time and you've introduced us to some pretty cool systems. Like, I guess my first question is what system that you've played is your favorite?
Boy, that's a hard one. That's a lot of years. Different time periods put you at a different place in your life, so you like different things. And so maybe it's more combat or more narrative, or you like all the crunchy bits. So at different parts of my life, I've liked different things. Especially if I played, and I've played in some campaigns. I've been a forever DM though. But, you know, it all depends on my perspective and what was hitting me at the time, what I really enjoyed. I really was a huge fan of Dungeons & Dragons early on. I mean, that was the game. But it was about the only game, really, in town. Yeah. There were some other games, Star Frontiers, Call of Cthulhu, let's see, this space game that my mind blanked out on. It's over in the corner. Traveler. And, but we didn't have a lot of access. You know, we didn't have a lot of money. So, there was a guy named, Sean, who was my cousin's uncle. And, he's like, here's some old D&D stuff I have. Here, go play it. You know, cause we couldn't buy it. There was no place where I grew up to really buy D&D stuff or RPGs. And it was kind of a niche thing anyway. A lot of people, didn't look fondly on it. And I've got, you know, stories there, but, it was new, and so we didn't have a lot of opportunities to play different things. So D&D was my first love.
All right, I assume that was like first edition D&D, first and maybe second edition, or that early on.
That's better to clarify. You're right. I did play beginner box D&D, which was Dungeons and Dragons. It comes in a purple box. I had both that. And I did get the red box later on, the famous red box with the Easley cover. I think it's Easley. And then I went to the Orange Spine books, which was second edition D&D, which came out pretty early on, too. And so we kind of mashed those all together. Just took anything we could find, really. We're like, oh, this is a cool book. Let's smash it in with this book. And even if the rules didn't work exactly the same, we kind of made it work.
That's how we started. I mean, we were playing those
Dungeon
Crawl Classic magazines, which was our dungeon that we were going to do for the day, but we were still using 5th edition rules. So we'd make our characters in 5e, and then I would run them through a DCC magazine, and it gets a little weird, you know?
You kind of make it up on the fly. Yeah. We did it all the time. It never even bat an eye on it. Now, anymore, it seems like a lot of people... very serious about the rule systems or whatever, but a lot of times we just made it up.
Yeah.
Oh, you wanted more than one platinum dragon? Sure, why not? Here's two platinum dragons or whatever. You're attacked by three Tiamats. You know, we just didn't care. Yeah. We were just having fun.
Yeah. It's at the end of the day, it's a, you know, it's just a way to express that, you know, creative storytelling side. It's a toy, you know, you're all there to have fun. It's something to play with. And I think that's when it's at its best, at least, you know. I think the older I get, the more it has to be grounded in some sort of like rules or system to like make me believe it for some reason, which is silly. But especially back then, I mean, anything goes.
We could have done literally anything back then, and it would have been the most entertaining part of our weeks.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I play with you guys, it still seems like that to me. That's why it's so different, because you guys are still like, hey, well, that sounds cool, let's just do that, which I think is great.
I think that has a lot to do with that we we were very invested in D&D for a long time. Like we did not play another system until Monster of the Week our senior year of high school. And since then, like, we've played D&D maybe twice, and you've introduced us to like four or five different systems. So basically every time that we've been at your table, we're just learning this new system, and it's something new and really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and probably me at the same time, because I've forgotten how to play those games so many times.
Well, and you have a lot of games to play, to kind of put it in perspective. And I think, so where my dad is recording right now, he's in his room, which is a kind of made out to be a whole dungeon. There's a kind of tavern-esque kind of wood paneling on the walls, planks that go across, and then the rest of the room is taken up by a kind of large bookshelf that he's made with cinder blocks and planks that's just sagged down with thousands of books. It has to feels like it of all
it does feel like that
games and board games. And
yeah, I've started to catalog them. I have had my daughter help me, and she gets very frustrated with me because I, you know, pull those off. No, not that one. That kind of stuff. I've only the DCC needs to come out. Not those are the horror DCC. Yeah, I've got way too many things. And I, you know, I'll catalog it and then I'll go look to see if it's on the shelf. You know, I put it back and then I'm like, where did those go? But yeah, I've got hundreds of books, hundreds.
Yeah. You talked about, you know, Jake asked your favorite system, which is kind of like picking a favorite child. But you talked about, like, you know, different points in your life, things were more exciting or you're really excited about. What were some kind of highlights of, like, oh, at this age, you know, I was doing this thing and we were playing this game and that was very memorable or meaningful to you kind of thing?
Yeah, when I was younger, like I said, D&D was the stuff, man. I couldn't get enough of that. We played so many different campaigns. Plus, you know, we played modules, or, you know, we took the modules and just kind of did whatever to them. We did Strahd, I don't know how many times, Gauntlet, Sentinel. We did all these Demon Web Pits, did all these Against the Giants, just weird. And then sometimes played them and then changed them. But then, you know, I got to be in college and we started playing things like Earth Dawn. That was a kind of a big one in the 90s, which is still lasting. I still collect Earth Dawn stuff. If I see it at like a shop or something, I'll buy it. I loved Earth Dawn. The other Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the first edition rules we played, that is something I'd love to play with somebody who's really into Warhammer Fantasy, because that whole system is grimdark. It was grimdark and it wasn't Tolkien-esque high fantasy or even Appendix N stuff. But it was so different and memorable. That whole, gosh, what is it? The Empire one. Now I got to look back again, guys, because I can't remember my brain. But it's the Enemy Within campaign. What a wonderful campaign! I had two players start almost fist fighting during that campaign. It was awesome. They were so into it, and I was probably 19, 20, 22, 23, something like that. And that was really big for a while. And then kind of we had a little gap there, but we got back to D&D and then did some Pathfinder, did a ton of Pathfinder when it came out. And I'm missing a lot, little teeny jumps. And I really like Dungeon World. I'm kind of excited for Dungeon World.
Oh, we're big Dungeon World proponents. We love Dungeon World. We will plug Dungeon World every episode so far. I think we've talked about Dungeon World.
You've talked about it. Good.
We've talked about Dungeon World not only in the context of Dungeon World, but how it's better than D&D.
We like it.
It was such a change, and it was nice to see that. And I like going back to those retro clone type things. I like Shadowgar, which is kind of a new one, and this Mothership. I love Mothership. I think it's great. I hope one day to be able to play it. It's super cool. These new indie games are very much where I like to be right now. I wouldn't count DCC as an indie game, but because it's getting kind of big, or it is big, but I really like DCC as well.
Yeah.
When we played Mothership, we played it with the Dread system, and I remember it so vividly.
I like that.
For those who don't know the Dread system, you play with a Jenga tower, and you have to pull, and if you knock over the Jenga tower, you basically lose, you die or whatever. And I am a very shaky person. My hands are always constantly shaking. And so he pulled that out and I was like, oh, we have to pull from that? And shockingly, at the end of it, I was the only person that didn't knock over the Jenga tower. So I was really proud of myself about that.
That was a stressful day.
That was really, yeah.
Session. Like you
that was so fun.
You know, you like
I was
Jenga on its own, it can be very anxiety inducing. And then tying that to a character and a situation that you're invested in, where you are fighting these horrible aliens and you're trying to make it out alive, and every time you try to do something to better your situation, you have to pull, and it just gets worse. So it just gets worse as the session goes on.
And then sometimes you have to pull two. I had to pull like two or three at one point, I think. I don't remember, but I just remember being so stressed out. It was so much fun.
In the best way. Stressful in the best way. Yeah.
It gets your blood pumping a little bit, that adrenaline going.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like watching people and they scoot further and further away from the table so they're not close. Yeah. I love that.
It's
wonderful.
The Jenga tower got so bad that I knew that someone, any one of the poles could have been it and they would have lost their character. And so I knew that we only had one option, and that was to knock it over, because if you willfully knock over the Jenga tower, your character does die, but whatever you're doing succeeds. And so in a blaze of glory, I knocked the tower over to give my friends some more time and some more successes so that because when the Jenga tower gets rebuilt, you know, they would have some safer blocks. And so I was out pretty early on that session, or at least quite a bit earlier than anybody else.
More than halfway through even when that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And you knocked it over and two more of us still died. Yeah, still I think I was the only one that made it out.
Just about. Yeah, I think you and one other made it out. Yeah. But it was a good, it was a worthy death. It made, you know, I mean, everybody wants to go out in a blaze of glory type thing. And there's no system that would do that better than actually knocking over a Jenga tower that clatters, you know, on the table or whatever. That was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it kind of feels good too because you get to knock it all over. You know you're doing well for everybody, not only in the game but actually physically. You're actually doing something that helps everybody else.
Yeah, I remember just being so relieved after Keegan did that. Yeah. I was like, oh, thank
God! Like, oh, you have some breathing room, you know? Like,
yeah,
yeah. What a tactile like way to add stress into a game. That's so interesting. You know, you always, especially in like the horror genre, you're always trying to think of like, how can I get people more into it so that they feel that, you know, because horror doesn't land if nobody really cares, you know. You need them to be kind of in the moment with you. And so it's like, is it lights, is it music, is it a candle that I light? And and it can be all of those things, but man, that Jenga tower, and you did all those things as well when you ran that game. You had
lights and music too.
We had the LEDs going, and you had this soundboard of creepy space, you know, kind of transmitter noises and beeping and, you know, almost dial up like noises. There's a lot of ambiance, and that in combination with the Jenga tower, that was a stressful day. It was great.
Yeah, I really liked it. I'd like to, you know, do that. I've talked about doing it with some of the kids in the library sometimes, but I'm not sure I can do it as well there. I don't know how the kids, they're younger kids, so I don't know how well it would go through.
Do Freddy Fazbear in the Dread system.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's, there you go.
I think that just showed our age because that's been dead for a while.
The kids love it still, I'm sure, right?
I don't think so. I think it's dead. I think it's done.
There's a
I have kids checking out books, Five Nights at Freddy's books.
Oh, there you go.
Really?
It lives.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, they made the movie.
Yeah, that movie. That movie's pretty recent.
That movie was actually good.
There's got to be some. This cannot be a Five Nights at Freddy's podcast. I can't allow it.
Hey, well, right now they're talking about Minecraft right now, so it's okay.
Yeah, Minecraft's big in the moment right now, which is. Yep. Nope. Can't get into that either. We got it. This is. Can't get into it. Jake, you got another one? What's your
I've
list?
I've got so many. Okay. Kind of the opposite of the last question. I know that I have a least favorite system, but what system irks you to the point where you just don't want to play?
Some low lights. We got highlights. What are some low lights?
I guess anymore it's not so much as like a specific one. It's the ones that I guess when I get into, they're full of things that impede the fun or impede the game flow, or, you know, there's too many rules, or maybe I'm just not feeling it there. A lot of times I find in my dotage, forgetful, and a lot of rules heavy systems make it so it becomes something that I don't want it to be. I don't feel the freedom in that case. And it's not rules. And if you play with rules, that's great. If you like rules, that's great too. It just, I find that those rules heavy games for me kind of just bum me out. I just don't want to mess with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where we're at now.
Yeah. We have found that the more narrative, the better for our group. And I mean, I understand the rules heavy systems. And I think if you have a group that maybe they enjoy the wargaming aspect of it more. They enjoy the combat. They enjoy the numbers. Or maybe they're just, you know, not as interested in flexing that creative muscle as much, you know, they haven't previously and they can't think of stuff on their own. Having a system where there are so many options ingrained could be very helpful. But for us that are really interested in telling that story and want to get creative, it's definitely more of a hindrance. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, you know, some of these really rules light systems powered by the apocalypse specifically is where we've really found our home. Anything that's powered by the apocalypse, which is the system that a lot of other games have been built on, is very fun for us because it's so, even the rules that are there are vague and can be interpreted different ways, and it really opens up the kind of opportunities to just say some wild stuff. And you know, if you can go there and you can get super creative and crazy while doing it in service of the story, I mean, mm-hmm. like that's where you get some really incredible characters and moments and role play and stuff yeah. like that.
I think yeah. after the last 2 years, we basically played no D&D for the last 2 years. And then this campaign that we're in at the end of right now is fifth edition. And we've spent so long not in fifth edition that, like, once we kind of got back into it,
it's hard.
It is really hard. It's like some of the rules are just like they feel bad mm-hmm. whenever like something happens, and it sucks. But it's not like the DM's fault or anything. But it's just the system is so limiting in some ways, and the freedom of like Dungeon World over D&D is. It just makes the story flow a lot better, I feel like, to what Joe is saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know if I have to go and I read a rule and then it says, you know, some keywords are in there and then I have to go find out what those keywords are, what's the difference between upgrading and increasing, you know, those kind of things mm-hmm. that I just kind of get, my brain starts getting lost and I think about slowing down. If it requires a system mastery, then I think, okay, that's probably not what I'm interested in now. I don't want system mastery in that way, especially as a bigger system. Yeah. I'm always, because the old way I played D&D was a lot of games rulings versus rules. So yeah. we just made rulings at the table and that was okay. Everybody was cool with it. And that made it better. When you have to stop, look in the book. And I know even some of the rules heavy games say, don't do this. You can go back and change mm-hmm. it later. But, you know, it feels to me like it's almost a requirement. Don't do that. But if you just look on page 183, you'll find the answer, you know, that kind yeah. of thing. And I don't have time to do that sometimes.
That's why I love those vague rules in a lot of those systems, is because it's vague enough where it allows a player to say, can I use that this way? Or does that mean I could do this? And then, mm-hmm. you know, so it allows for this creative asking of a question. And then the DM now has the freedom to say, yeah, that's awesome. That totally works. How creative and cool. Or that doesn't feel like it's, you know, intended that way, or that feels a little powerful, or maybe that's not, you know, a great kind of habit to start. That feels a little bit, you know, like it's manipulating the system there. And to say, no, that is not going to work, you know, for whatever reason. And I think that interaction of a player asking if something is possible, and then you getting to decide as the DM if it is very fun, because, you know, when someone yeah. comes up with something very creative and cool and exciting and fun, getting to tell them yes is awesome. It's a great feeling. And then to see it play out.
Yeah, yeah. I love when players come up with things. I think that's the best part. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. That sounds awesome. Let's do that.
Yeah. But there has to be a level of trust there that, you know, when they ask, you know, can I do this? And the DM says, I don't think so. You know, you have to be okay with that too and continue moving forward, you know?
I just got the biggest flashback to when we were playing Vampire the Masquerade and we were in like an old broken down building or something. And I just remember asking if I could do something. And Joe was like, I think that might be a little bit. I believe the word I used was, I would like to... like run away gingerly so that way they don't hear me or something. And Joe's like, I don't think he can do that.
Are you sneaking or sprinting? Two very different things.
But I'm doing it gingerly.
You're doing it on your tiptoes. That's great. And I forgot, there was a point, I forgot this, you had asked this question earlier about what's like, there was a time when Vampire the Masquerade was also one of my favorite systems of all time. Mm,
yeah.
I really enjoyed Vampire.
Yeah, we played a couple sessions of that, 2, 3, 4, something like that.
We did like 4 or 5, yeah.
Yeah, 4 or 5. That was fantastic. That was super fun. I love the atmosphere that created and the kind of mysteries that we were like tracking down. And like I always felt like we were definitely a step behind our adversaries in Vampire.
Yeah.
But it landed in a way that was very funny because we were always just chasing, you know, that next clue. We were always a little bit slow to it.
Oh my god, yeah, I think all of our characters were like, all of our characters are kind of funny in a way because we're all in this really serious situation, and you played like, he'd like to sit there and talk to himself.
Yeah, he was kind of a crazy doctor.
He's kind of a crazy guy. And I was like a serious, like kind of a gangster guy, but it was like ended up not being serious at all because I just say the worst thing every time.
And that's the greatest part about that is all this stuff that just arises out of the gameplay. Mm-hmm. You just have a few set things, and then next thing you have this great story, and it goes in different places, and it's fun. Everybody's kind of smiling and having a great time, or really stressed out. Oh no, that werewolf! There's a werewolf! Watch out! You know, that kind of stuff. I think it's great, and you guys are you're really good at that. You know, being surprised about things like this is it's red blood. You know, it's moon.
Oh gosh, that reveal! We were trying to figure out the mystery of this drug. This drug had changed, and it was a new formula, and it was called Crimson Moon, and it was making people crazy. And we're trying to figure out what's going on, and the reveal of it, which we did not come to this conclusion early. The reveal was that it was werewolf blood, Crimson Moon, werewolf blood, and we had to see the werewolf in a cage having its blood drained for us to make the connection. Yeah. And I remember calling that out at the table, being like, Crimson Moon, it's werewolf blood, and all of our minds exploded with how cool that was. And I've been chasing that dragon ever since as a DM, like having the players like minds blown with a realization of a mystery or something. And I don't know what it was, but
I think that's one thing that Joe does really well is that he has done this for a long time, so he knows how to drop those hints in just a way that we kind of like maybe suspected something was a little off, but we are simply too like into the game to really put much thought into it.
You're just great audience on that. You're just great players for that. That makes it fun.
I don't know if that's being a great player or if we're just dumb. Like
it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I think you have to have a level to have that reaction though, and to go, "Oh my gosh, that's so crazy!" You have to have like a level of investment that not all players would provide. And so I think being into it so much that you get so excited or yell or scream when you figure something out is that is providing something as a player that I think is a service to the table. It's
Yeah, that's got to be like that's like DM high point right there is when your players are that invested.
Yeah, when they're that excited, or when you can get like we played at Earthdawn, like I told you before, I had one character who was terrified. He was literally terrified, and not that it was fun to terrify this guy, but to see him so invested, so scared for his character, they would jump, and it was great because he's having this like real experience, and it was fun, and he wasn't just mad at the rules or something, which is. But it seems like sometimes.
Yeah. I remember we had a moment where we were kind of hiding in this like secret room, and there was this like detective, the cops had shown up to this crime scene, and we were looking at the crime scene. So we hid in this kind of secret room, closeted area.
That was the gingerly moment too.
Yeah. That was, you tried to get away quickly, but gingerly. And there was this detective that we knew was like supernatural in some way, whether he was another vampire or a werewolf or whatever, and he was getting closer and closer to figuring out where this room was, and we were trying to figure out how we were going to get out unnoticed. And you had described, because of our vampire preternatural hearing, we were hearing his heartbeat as he got closer, and I started doing like a heartbeat noise in my throat. Yeah. And one of our other players looked at me and went, "Knock it off!" Like he was there was a moment where he was so flustered and anxious that he was mad at me for making this heartbeat noise and adding to the stress, even if it was just in a flash. There was a real reaction there. And that's always what you're shooting for, like that level of investment. That's the goal. You're there to have fun, and when you can be so attached, whether it's really emotional or excited or whatever your reaction is, whatever emotion it is, when you can get those like heightened emotions like that, man, that's that's the game. That's why we do it, right?
It looks like fun. It's fun. That's what we're going for. That's the fun part. People are having fun.
All right, next question. Let me scroll through my list here. Okay. So you've been a DM for a long time. Do you remember any particular PC that either you've done or somebody else has done, or a BBG that really sticks out to you?
Well, I think some of those things that we talked about with the werewolf, those all stuck out to me. Jake, your character is the gangster, 70s, you know, era gangster vampire. It sticks out to me. Keegan with his character with a jellyfish on a string. There are lots of characters that really stick out. I think about him fondly. I'm like, yeah, that was pretty cool. I remember we had a player who played a very, very, very old druid, and he would fall down a lot. And he was just old, and he would just be broken. And then I had another character whose character was the expert on everything. He just played him like he was the expert. And with some lucky rolls, he was the expert in some cases. It just made it real fun because he was like, oh yeah, I can do that. And he had no skills in that, but it made for a fun thing. And memorable, because those characters were very memorable.
I have to prod a little bit on the BBG side of that, because I'm curious. Do you feel like there's a BBG that you had that you just like sold so well or was so menacing?
You know what? I'm trying really hard to remember a BBEG like that. A lot of the times, I always feel like it comes off as that guy. You know, that kind of, there are a couple that come from the Enemy Within campaign, which I thought were great, and I'm still to this day, I'm reluctant to even say anything about it because I don't want to spoil that for somebody who hasn't played it. The same thing with the Cthulhu campaign that's just right over there too. There's a lot of big bads in there that I really like, and I like these different aspects of that big bad. But I always wait for to play those because I'm like, I can't wait to play that guy because he's so cool. But we never seem to get to those sometimes. So maybe it's better I never got to those. But there are some that I think would be fun. And like I said, without the spoilers, those were pretty cool.
One lifetime is not enough to get to play all the tabletop RPGs out there. Unfortunately, it's just there's so much, and there's so much good stuff out there.
Oh yeah, I look at all this stuff and I think some of it's still in the shrink wrap. I'm never gonna open it, which is kind of depressing because I really want to. But maybe that hope burns eternal, that kind of thing, you know, or hope springs eternal. I kind of hope to get to it sometime, but we'll see.
Hey, well, I mean, when you're retired, you know, you'll have a lot of time on your hands. You know, you could be running multiple sessions a week.
Mother will love that.
There's a lot in store for you yet. I think for kind of a last question, and no rush on this, we can definitely keep going here for a little bit. But for like I think a good final question is, you've mentioned, you know, Jake and I are still so young in this. And so if you could give some advice to, I'd say specifically more DMs, but people playing or just being in the tabletop RPG community and stuff as well, if you could give some advice to the young people or not so young people just getting into the world and running games for their friends and stuff, what would be some of your best pieces of advice, do you think?
Some of the things I think they come off as simple, though. Really, they do. Just go have fun. Don't worry about the rules. It's that whole experience as a shared, you know, it's a shared experience, a shared story that you do. I think that's the most important thing. Let go of some of those things. Don't worry if you're going to make the voices or you're going to make silly voices or whatever. Don't worry about that stuff. I used to worry about that. That's not important. You're there to have a good time and just experience it and say yes. I think that's probably one of the best things I've seen that in recent times about DM. Because it was brought up into a no, a DM shouldn't let you do this. But say yes. If you're a player, too. Yeah, that sounds cool. Let's try that. Maybe it's not what you were hoping for, but let's just yes. Let's go with it, man, and see what happens. I really think to say yes and kind of move on from there and don't just stop makes it a lot better. And let people play their characters, and to their kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that saying yes.
I think is like the best advice that you can give anyone playing.
You can always
any new game.
You can always fix things on the back end as a DM. Mm. You know, if you like, you know, you could have a low level party and the, you know, paladin tries to summon, you know, a holy avenger from his god, you know, to smite these level 2 zombies, and you could give it to him and you could fix that. Yeah, it's not like nothing. I don't think anything is game breaking. I really don't. I think because, you know, if your party gets really strong and starts doing lots of damage, enemies are going to start having a lot more health. And, you know, like it's just a lot of things are fixable on the back end as a DM, you know, the things that happen behind your DM screen that you can still make it fun and engaging while saying yes. I think there is a limit. You know, you want, if you say yes too much, you know, then your players will feel like there is no rules. They can do anything. You know, you want challenges. You know, you want your nose to not be, you know, a wall that stops progress, but you want your nose to be
another hurdle. They have
at least a roadblock to make them think for a second. Go, okay, let's try something else. You know, not everything can be success. You can't succeed all the time. That's not interesting. You know, failure is inherently very, very interesting, and because that's where you learn and grow and do different things. But I think there's a lot of opportunities to say yes and cool stuff.
And saying yes, and with the consequences, you know, they say yes, mm-hmm. but, yes. Yes, and, those things. And I, you know, we're talking about playing Star Wars from FFG, which now, whatever they're called, the new company, mm-hmm. after Asmodee bought them out. Those narrative dice allow you to, you know, say yes, but, or yes, and, or this thing happens. Mm-hmm. So what you, I mean, not so what. So you grapple over this, chasm and you do it and you did great, but you rolled a complication in some way and maybe a unit of stormtroopers comes out and starts firing at you. You still, mm-hmm. you got the yes, you did the jump across the chasm. That's great. Now you have stormtroopers to deal with. I think that's fine. And it's conflict drives, Brahma. So it's wonderful.
And you can.
I think that's something that, like, the more rules light systems that we've been playing, especially the Powered by the Apocalypse one, to do is that they explicitly say in there that, like, if somebody, like, makes a check or something, you say yes. And just if they pass, like, that doesn't always mean that they succeed on what they intended to do, but there could be some kind of undesired consequence of that. Mm-hmm. And that's written into the rules that you, as a DM, should be doing something like that. And I think it makes
difficult choices.
These things like that. Yeah, it makes people like question whether or not they should do that thing that maybe was a little bit more silly, but still gives them the option to do the thing that's silly. And then there's the yes, but, or the yes, and.
Right.
And that makes everything so much cooler, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you can let your player do a cool thing, and then also. Like, I remember a funny example from one of our Dungeon World campaigns is they're in this town and it's kind of this vampire, you know, infected place. And there's like this one, you know, they're talking to like one of the sole survivors of this town. And, you know, as night falls, the town gets rushed by ghouls. And they all leave this building and they see the ghouls rushing them on the street. There was like 4 of them. And I described them as like crawling over each other to get to the players, because it was very World War Z in my mind. It looked scary and cool as they're like, you know, just almost ripping each other apart to get to these guys to eat them. And I'm like, oh, ghouls are going to be so tough for these players, because, you know, they can ghouls can stun the players and they can lose turns. It's gonna be a difficult combat. And I had made a fatal error in describing that they were on top of each other, because Jake goes, I cast fireball. And I couldn't say that they had some distance between them. I had trapped myself. And so he fireballs them, rolls incredible on his damage, and turns 4 ghouls of that I thought was going to be this really challenging combat to ash. And so I'm scrambling, thinking what I'm going to do. And so what happened...
I love it so much.
What happened was 4 more ghouls rushed from the other side of the street, and this sole survivor that was with them called out, ah, the ghouls, they always come in 8s.
Dude, that was like, you did that? I was so like, I was mad, but like, I was laughing too at the same time, because I was like, I knew from the DM standpoint that you're like, oh, I just, this cool combat that we were just gonna do didn't happen.
I pulled the rug out a little bit. It was a little mean,
it was really funny.
But you fireballed them and turned them to ash, and you were a cool wizard, and we still got to have that combat. You know, it's mm-hmm. everybody wins.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, you started telling. I knew exactly. I couldn't hold in the laughter.
That was very much a yes, but. Or.
They all die. They turn to ash. Four more ghouls in the corner. Aye, they always come in groups of eight. It was that fast, too. It literally was just
that was,
like 5 seconds.
That was one of my quicker, like, think on your feet moments as a DM. That was pretty quick. All right.
It was.
Well, Dad, thanks so much for coming on here and, you know, answering some questions for us and giving some wisdom. You know, we do it because we love talking about tabletop RPGs, and we knew that you would too, and you've been great to have on here. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I hope I get to play with you soon.
We will.
We're going to play this weekend.
We're going to play some Star Wars. I'm very excited.
I'm so excited.
All right.
And I want to say thank you, Joe, because, I mean, if it wasn't for you, I would probably have never been introduced to this. If it wasn't from you through Keegan, I would have never been introduced to this. And this is such a big part of my life now, and it's something that I really love. And I just want to say thank you because
thanks.
You introduced this to us, and it means a lot to me.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad we get to play more, so that's cool. Let's do that.
I think everybody should play more. That's the overlying message of this episode is play more tabletop RPGs, say yes more, have fun. I think we imparted some really great messages here. Other than that, just our normal wrapping up stuff. Spotify has the comment feature. Please leave a comment down there. Talk about some of your favorite tabletop RPG stories or questions or pieces of advice that you'd like to hear about. You know, rate 5 stars. That's super huge for kind of the Spotify algorithm. That'd be super, super helpful to us.
Sharing.
Our email. Yep, sharing. And just, like word of mouth, like Jake said, like just if you have friends that love tabletop RPGs or like to hear people talk about them, please let them know that this is out there. Our email is down below in the description. Send us an email. Same thing, your favorite tabletop RPG stories or questions. And I think I was going to say we've been the Gelatinous Dudes. I think it's the Gelatinous Dudes and Gelatinous Dad. That's not it.
Thanks,
I don't know if you've ever been described that way as gelatinous, but it's a compliment here, at least in this space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've been the Gelatinous Dudes and Gelatinous Dad. I hope you guys have enjoyed, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.